welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Elise Matitol, and I had the pleasure of speaking with Reverend Cindy Pincus, an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister and queer community builder in Denver. Great. So before we dive in, will you introduce yourself and some of your roles in the community?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is the Reverend Cindy Pincus. I'm an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister. I've served as a hospice and hospital chaplain. I currently serve as an individual spiritual director and work with folks to do, like life ceremonies, like births and funerals and marriages and separations and baby blessings and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a wonderful existence.
I'm curious about your journey to becoming a minister and a healer and like what drew you to seminary.
Yeah. Well, I really don't have a better answer than that than just a Law and Order episode that I was watching one day and there was a murder in a seminary in New York City. And I don't remember what happened or who committed the murder or for what reason, but I just kind of sat up and was like, oh my God, there's still such a thing as seminary, and it's not just for Catholic priests. And so immediately Googled, you know, like liberal seminary and found many wonderful seminaries and theological schools in this country. So I started down that path, and I had a chance to study with Jesuits and Franciscans and Baptists and Buddhists and agnostics and pagans and Druids, and just had a really rich education, which has very much informed my path coming out of there. And for a while, I was on a pretty consistent and classic ministry path of, you know, preaching on Sundays, serving in a congregation, working with people as a hospital or hospice chaplain. And I've been watching how the world has been changing the past few years, as many of us had, and just realized that I need more tools than I had. And I needed to be able to speak more theological and spiritual languages than I did. So I began to study with folks in indigenous lineages in both North, Central, and South America, as many of us are kind of waking up to the wisdom that is already here on this land and making good relationships and, you know, offering good support to the peoples who have wisdom, who I think can really help us at this point in time. So those are all traditions I'm learning from right now.
That's cool. So it sounds like you started in a more Christian thing and then have transitioned a little bit, but it sounds like you also weave in a lot of interfaith work. How do you conceptualize that?
Yeah. Well, it's really beautiful that we have so many different kinds of people on this planet. And I think that's really scary for a lot of people. And sometimes I'm even, you know, feel fear about difference. And it's the thing that's really saved my life, is encountering difference and discovering that I'm very different to other people, and that connection and relationship is still possible. So that has to be true for people's spiritual beliefs as well, that our differences is what is going to really work for us at this point in time. And it's important for us to, you know, celebrate all of these spiritual differences. And, you know, my attitude is kind of take what I like and take what works, more importantly, and leave the rest, because it'll work for someone else. You know, that's for them. And you know, there's so many different medieval mystics and Sufi mystics and Buddhist and Hindu mystics who say there are many paths to God, many paths to spirit, but they all lead to spirit. And thank God, you know, thank God that that's true, because I'm walking a very individual path and I wouldn't want it any other way. And so I just really want that for people. I want people to have that freedom.
I think that is related to something that I've noticed in the way that you find teachings, look back at figures from the past, where you often like reinterpret or reclaim stories that have been harmful to queer people or women specifically. I have noticed that. So how do you view your role in like reclaiming folks or stories to be more helpful now?
Yeah. Well, I'll give thanks to the many good teachers that I've had who've been doing that work and who've learned from their teachers, and just say that there's like such a strong, amazing, powerful lineage that so many people are a part of saying, hey, these stories are actually about me and actually about my beauty and, you know, my struggle. And they're actually about my sexuality and how beautiful it is to be queer, you know? And I don't know. I just really love preaching and teaching directly from the scriptures because it's all in there, you know? It's like, there's a lot of queerness. There's a lot of made family. There's a lot of like discarded biological family. There's a lot of embrace of the sexual deviant, quote unquote, you know, someone who doesn't fit. And there's like no translation necessary. It's just right there in the scripture. And so it's really, I mean, the other thing about the Christian and Hebrew scriptures is they are voluminous. And a lot of it is not easy to read. And a lot of it is not interesting to read. And so I can understand why a lot of folks don't read it. Like, that's my job, you know, to read that and pull out those stories and say, look, you're in here too. And you don't have to look that hard. And you don't have to get a crazy translation. It's just like, right here for you. So I think that's really important work to do. And I'm so glad that we have like so many feminist and womanist and indigenous and, you know, non-American and non-European folks who are just like loving these scriptures, the many scriptures that we have, and like pulling out their identities and being like, see, we're already here, you know, and the Bible might not say anything at all about abortion, actually, or about queer people, or about, you know, taking the lands of others. Anyway, we could get started on a sermon, but thanks for that question. Yeah, it really matters.
Well, so I'm curious, who would be like your favorite example of this? Like, I have heard you talk about how radical Jesus is, or finding healers from the past. Who would be your like favorite person or example?
Yeah. You know who came to mind immediately is a woman, a Black woman named Lucille Clifton, who wrote poetry about scripture and her experience just being a Black woman. And it's beautiful because it's scriptural. It's about the relationship between the devil and God, between Cain and Abel, between herself and water, between, you know, boats and setting sail, and just life as a woman, life in a Black woman's body. So I think I've kind of backed off of recommending heady academic scripture or heady academic texts. That's something that I love because I'm a mega nerd and a scholar. And I try to put forth something like Lucille Clifton's work, which is just beautiful poetry that says, yeah, this is for you too. Unbeknownst to a lot of folks, Mary Oliver, who's a well-known poet, a queer white woman, wrote a lot of Christian poetry that's really beautiful. I think we like to sidestep it because we like to keep Mary Oliver very secular so she can be approachable to many people. But it's there. She's got a beautiful theology. And yeah, those are two women who come to mind.
That's awesome. I think you're also touching on something of like how people have been harmed by religion or religious things. They might be sort of wary. And I've noticed that you often will sort of make this distinction between like spirit and God or like religious people who have harmed versus like spirituality itself. Can you maybe talk about that distinction?
Yeah. Well, I'll say that I personally have not come through any significant religious harm. And so I think for a while I didn't take it that seriously. And being a minister and encountering many more people who have been willing to share about the religious harm and spiritual harm they suffered has really changed me and really touched me in a way I wasn't expecting. So it's become very important to me now. The thing that comes to mind right away is to meet people where they're at. And I think it's become more important to me to acknowledge the pain and suffering that people still carry. There's something about spiritual abuse that just goes bone deep. It's like, it's just, it's not the same as, you know, having someone yell something at you or like being in a car accident or even being in an abusive relationship, which can last years and people do so much good work to heal. There's something really deep about spiritual abuse. So I've started to take that really seriously and realize that it has a huge potential for healing. And I'll also say that the people I've encountered who are in the process of healing from and recovering from spiritual abuse are some of the most amazing people and have like true spiritual gifts to offer. So I feel like the thing that I can do in response to that is just to use as much different kinds of language, spiritual language, as possible, so as to not cause more harm, so as to keep open many doors and avenues of healing and exit. Like, it does not matter to me if someone uses the word God or Savior or Healer or Jesus or Avatar or Spirit or higher power. I'm just like, whatever is the closest door for you to continue your spiritual healing, because like the world needs it, then that's a door that I'll keep open. I also, you know, all of these words have such power and such different kinds of power, and can be really contextual, that I have a lot of fun playing with all the words, sometimes saying spirit, sometimes saying like mother God or mothering God. You know, I love surprising people by talking about Jesus and then saying something like, "Oh, I just love my boyfriend." And people think it's so funny, but we can be intimate in that way with spirit. And with, you know, the avatars and manifestations of spirit. So yeah, just to have like a lighthearted and a playfulness and to keep all those doors open as many as possible for as many different people as possible really matters, I think.
I'm thinking about just your draw towards healing work. And I had the pleasure of doing a series with you that was like spiritual care for burnout and for activism. And I know that you are really connected to sort of the activist communities in Denver. So how have you sort of developed that?
Yeah. Okay. So here's the trajectory of that. Part of my lineage is Unitarian Universalist Church, which have a huge social justice, social activist component. For many congregants in those congregations, UU congregations, the spiritual practice is activism and protesting and social justice. And it's amazing what Unitarian Universalists have accomplished and similar churches like that. And I saw people burn out real fast. And I slowly came to the realization that like spiritual work must come first, or let me put it this way, spiritual food and nourishment and ritual and prayer and connecting with spirit must come first. And I think sometimes we make the mistake, and for a while I made the mistake, of thinking that activism and justice was spiritual food. But what I've discovered is that it's the outcome for me of a good relationship with God and spirit, and seeing that, you know, my God is a God of justice and of peace and of equity and of restoration of wrongs. And so once I have that good relationship, then like activism is a natural outcome, but it's not the engine of what drives me. And when I try to make it an engine, I burn up pretty fast. So I started attending a different church, House for All Sinners and Saints, where there were many activists in the congregation, social workers and teachers and public servants. And the main and only priority for the congregation was to preach grace and forgiveness, to share bread and wine, and to have a resting spot on Sunday night. And I think a lot of people were upset that they weren't a more activist church. And the ministers there just refused to do that. You know, as one of the ministers, Reverend Nadia Bowles Weber, said, it's important for people to just be the broken thing at least one day a week and not have to fix the broken thing all 7 days of the week. So there are people in this world who are so much better at activism and social justice and getting out there and strategizing than I am. And I will willingly follow them, but it's not my training. And I like readily admit that my training is spiritual care. And so for me, the part that I realized I can play best at this moment in time is to provide just the best spiritual care I can to folks who are activists and social justice people and people who are like, F this, I'm so burned out, I need help. And I can say, I can try to help you. I can offer you tools. So yeah, that's kind of the trajectory of how that happened. And just me realizing where my skills are, where my skills aren't, where I can offer a service that might help people that are helping the world, that are changing the things that I don't necessarily at this point in time have the tools to change. So that's my little part, you know, and I'm doing it the best I can. My new shoes, walk for miles, danced around at their own style, had a tail. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver. I'm your host, Elise Matatal, and I've been chatting with Reverend Cindy Pincus, an ordained minister and queer community builder in Denver. I mean, I realized that I started seminary because I love throwing parties, and so I just wanted to do that with like a spiritual bent, you know, like parties for a purpose. And I don't think that that was my explicit thought, but I was like, wow, when I'm a minister, I could really gather the people, you know? And I love finding all the weirdos at the party and making a little group out of them, or just like connecting with the weirdos on the edge, which is really what Jesus did. And I learned that in seminary, you know, he just went to the edge of the tent, so to speak, and like lifted up the flap and let all the weirdos in the back door and had a great party. So that was my initial trajectory as a minister. And then I've realized that, oh, there's just so much good spiritual work to be done. So, you know, it may come back around to that. One of the things I love to do for my friends, you know, who will have me, is to have people over for like a fire ceremony and a prayer. You know, we build a big fire altar and say our prayers and our intentions and talk to the moon and burn all of our, you know, little discrepancies and indiscretions. And, you know, I think that's a great party. I have such a good time. So yeah. And like just folding death work in there too, as well as, you know, the births and the weddings and the divorces. And yeah, it's all part of the fabric. And I feel so lucky to get to weave it all together, you know, to be rather cliched about it.
Well, I will say you throw great parties.
Thank you.
I know that you identify as queer. Actually, I don't know how you identify, but there is so much queerness woven into the way that you talk about things and how you conceptualize your work. And you also bring a lot of queer weirdos around to hang. How do you think about queerness in your work?
Yeah. Yes. Thanks. I identify as queer. And that's been like where I've settled after various identities of like bisexual and lesbian and gay and straight, and queer really works for me right now. And it feels really beautiful because it I get to be different iterations of myself on different days. I get to express different parts of myself depending on who my partner is for that moment or that month or that year. And it's just freaking awesome. And I think it gives my partners permission to be more queer, or I certainly hope so. And I think about this a lot, both unconsciously and consciously. And, you know, again, I'll just go back to, you know, teachers and avatars like Jesus, who were really explicit about being for queer people. And I think we might not recognize that with the scriptures today because we don't really know what he was talking about and like who these people were, because Roman society is not our society, or it's a very small portion of this world's population society. But for most people, especially in the US, Roman society is not ours. So we don't know that like a eunuch is really queer, or like a woman who leaves the kitchen is really queer. Some might call her a dyke or a butch in modern terms. We don't know that like, you know, the woman at the well was actually really queer and outside of things. And so I don't know. I'm just like, this matters. This seems to be like this great teacher came and hung out with all the queer people. And I just love reminding people of this, that like Jesus was never married. He may have had two or three different girlfriends. He may have had 12 to 13 boyfriends. You know, they were all wedding crashers. They loved to dance and party. You know, his parting message to people was, take my body into your body and call that holy and sacred. And the Catholics and many others get on their knees to do that, which I'm like, that's sexy, you know? That's really sexy, and there's something about that. And so, I don't know, even today you can just kind of look and see that there's so much queerness, particularly in this one faith and some iterations of this one Christianity, that are actually very supportive of queer people, even though they tend to really try and harm queer people. And so I just try to bring that into all the theology and work that I do, and to recognize like the brilliance of queer people, whatever it is that makes them queer, and to recognize that queer folks have a very unique and valuable and necessary perspective on whatever their society is, because they're outside of it in a certain sense. And so they can see it, you know, we can see it in a different way, and might have the perspective that can save us, you know, and say like, you really got some gum on your butt. You need to wipe that off. And I can see it because you kicked me way over here. So it's clear to me, you know, so it matters. It's a big part of my theology, both explicit and implicit.
That's so important to think about, like, it was already happening. Queer stuff was already happening. All of these things are pretty queer if you think about it. What other lineages do you draw on in your healing work? I feel like you've mentioned a couple of things, but I'm curious specifically.
So I personally identify most with Franciscan theology, which is a real like creation-based, love-based theology. And I don't mean creation as in creationism. I think evolution of biological organisms on this planet is so cool and so real, and there's no problem with that. But creation as like the earth. And Franciscan theology at its core says that, you know, God so loved this earth that we can see this love overflowing from it in the water and the trees and the birds and the plants, and just like, oh my God, we're living inside a love planet. We like just, we can't get away from it. We're walking in love, and we're in a love forest, and we're in a love ocean. And that just really resonates with me. I also pay a lot of attention to indigenous cultures on this continent, currently known as North America, properly known as Turtle Island by some folks. Indigenous cultures like the Lakota and the Dakota folks, who have a lot of teachings about how to be in relationship with the seasons. I'm trying to pay really close attention to what Indigenous folks are doing on this planet at this time. Also in Canada as well, there's people are really paying attention right now to how do we reckon with the past, where children have been stolen from us, and what that means for us, and how we heal that. And I'm not saying we like I, Cindy, but, you know, the Indigenous folks who are saying we. I pay attention to Indigenous cultures in Mexico, in particular the Huichol people, who their territory has been really closed down to a southern portion of mountains in Mexico. But they have beautiful teachings about awareness, and their 5 points of awareness are just a great way to move through the day. And just briefly, the 5 points are self, whatever it is I'm interacting with, the place I'm interacting in, what's happening inside the earth, and what's happening above the earth and the stars. And it's a deep practice to try and keep those 5 points of attention. And the Huichols teach us that. And then various different peoples in Peru, who I think a lot of folks are starting to realize that there's tremendous wisdom along the Andes and in the Amazon. And again, these are people really worth listening to and watching how they live. These are people who live ceremonially and might have something great to teach us. So those are some of my people that I pay attention to and try and learn from and be humble before. And there's one thing I try to pay attention to as a white woman visiting and I guess I could say sitting in some indigenous spaces is just to be a really good guest and to come with a lot of humility.
That's great. In our last couple of seconds, where can people find you? Are there things that you have in the works that you'd like our listeners to know about? Anything you want to share?
Yeah. So you can find me on my website, which is cardialumina.com. And the thing that I'm really working on right now is an online class called The Alchemy of Forgiveness. And it's been amazing. It's been amazing to teach and put together. And I think it matters now because we're a country and a world full of resentment and bitterness. And really, I think a lot of people could benefit from the many, many tools of forgiveness and grace and compassion and letting go. So that's my contribution happening right now. You know, God help us, please.
On KGNU, Boulder, Denver. I'm Elise Manitol, and I've been speaking with Reverend Cindy Pincus. For more information about Cindy and some of her spiritual offerings with Cardia Lumina, you can visit news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about today's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday, at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, providing you homegrown queer radio every week. That's Monday, 6:30 p.m. right here on KGNU or anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources.